Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, I've just watched Roger Federer's match against Marta Fucsovics, which he won in four sets here at the Australian Open, in Catherine's flat. Surrounded by snacks and beer, I'm on my second one. It's two beers and law night for the first time in the Australian Open in 2020. And we've got the screen on showing Matt's beloved Fulham live against Manchester City. And Matt seems to be watching through his fingers.
Fulham
in horror,
channeling Martin Fucsovics.
Yes, it's not going very well.
Oh, we've just passed the ball straight there.
Oh dear. Okay, all right. The live updates are not what the Tennis Podcast listeners are coming for. So let's go backwards through the order of play, shall we? And start with Roger Federer, who had obviously had that match against John Millman a couple of nights ago, and somehow survived. And tonight he lost the first set. And it was alarm bells, but he ended up winning easily, really, because the sets 2, 3, and 4 were straightforward. What was your sense of what you saw?
Well, during our Tennis Podcast viewing party, I think Federer himself said in his rather peculiar on-court interview with John McEnroe, with dad jokes aplenty by the end, but the start of that interview was reasonably insightful into how he was feeling, and he said that he was kind of struggling to wake up in the morning post John Millman, which I think was making light of the fact that actually he was pretty knackered after that match, and this was a bit of a hangover in that first set. And the other thing he said was that Millman had really given his ground strokes a beating, and he was short on confidence.
That was an interesting insight, wasn't it?
Yeah.
For Federer to admit that Millman basically took his confidence from
him. Yeah, well, I mean, even after that victory over Millman two nights ago, and he was, you know, he was giddy, wasn't he? He was high on life. He still was talking about demons, which was just an incredible line at the time. And Fucsovics, for as much as there are things to admire there, he's not the guy to test Federer in those weak spots, is he? In the areas that he has those niggling demons.
Whereas Millman honed in on Federer's forehand and just went after it and broke it down, quite frankly. Federer's forehand was spraying all over the place the other night. Whereas Fucsovics himself makes quite a lot of errors. He's got more of a big game. It's less built on solidity. So Federer, I think, once he was able to get a little bit of a foot in the match, was able to play a bit more freely, mix up his game a lot more. And he's got that ability because he's able to come to the net, come forward, and he's got options if 2-0.
God.
Someone else carry on.
Okay.
18 minutes gone.
Not going to do much for the
quality of this podcast.
The morale of the podcast is just diving. At least we can have gallows humour as part of it instead. I've also got more beer over here, Matt.
This is live on the BBC.
Yeah,
they get like millions watching this.
Abject humiliation. The next round for Federer, it's Tennis Sangren.
Should we pause while you do dad jokes?
Well,
given that you are a dad,
I just need to inform my parents who are listening to this that the man's name is actually Tennis.
Come on, everyone knows that now.
No, they don't know
around,
that.
He's been in our consciousness for 3 years.
My parents have never heard of him. It's Tennis with a Y, folks.
No, but they're podcast listeners, and we've talked about him on the podcast. We've done your whole bit about saying your names like Cherish or something at Starbucks.
Oh, yes.
That was as a result of tennis.
Was it?
Lying. He lies about his name. Come on, this is just rehashing old material. I was joking about pausing for tennis jokes.
I lie about my name to amuse my wife.
He lies about his name to Starbucks when he's ordering a coffee because he doesn't want to have to explain that his name is tennis.
Oh, he does.
And then that set you up. Yes, but then at the time, podcast 3 years ago.
How do you remember
you
all
said,
this
oh,
stuff?
You know, you busted out your lying about your name at Starbucks story.
Do you know when I was in Orlando, I called myself Pedro.
This is like McEnroe and Federer all over again.
And Donald. Anyway.
That's a bit close to the bone.
So, Donald Duck. Duck. Not Trump.
Yeah, he's definitely the most famous Donald in the year 2020, David.
I was at Disney. Goodness.
Pedro.
It worked.
Oh, my God.
Anyway.
You had the audacity to sit there laughing at McEnroe and Federer doing dad jokes earlier.
Some of us are proud of their dad jokes, all right? Me and Federer, both the same. All of us are like that. Right. So where did we get to? Tennis Sangren, who beat Fabio Fognini today.
We'll talk about that later. Or should we talk about it now?
Let's talk about it now, okay. Because that was just an absolute joke of a match. I turned on. They'd obviously had a perfectly run-of-the-mill first set tiebreak in which they'd both played well and battled it out. And then at the end of it, the next thing I know is I'm looking at Tennis Sangren having an absolute go at the umpire, Damon Dumasoir. And Fabio Fognini is nowhere to be seen at all. Just not on the court.
At what stage is Fabio Fognini already had his point penalty at this stage?
No. So what's happened, from my understanding, what's happened is the end of the set has come. They've had the normal kind of sit down and Fabio's, I think, probably just upset and sitting there or whatever. And then Fabio decides he needs to go off the court to go to the toilet. And I
get the impression he probably hovered over whether or not he'd bother coming back.
I think he did that when they were saying time, right? So then Tennis Sangren says, this is not right. This is not in the rules. And Fabio Fognini didn't come back for 7 minutes. he eventually comes back. And whilst he's walking, I'm trying to remember the exact timeline here. As he's walking back, there's this big row going on. And then he comes back and he loses the next game to Love and he's playing terribly. And then he just takes off his shirt whilst it's not even a sit down. So he starts changing his shirt in front of everybody and he gets a point penalty at that point. So he goes Love 15 down. Then he refuses to carry on because he needs to have a medical timeout for a blister. So he starts getting a blister sorted out when all this is going on. And Tennis Sangren is going up the wall at this point.
Understandably.
And he is saying, I mean, Fabio was taking the Michael. It was outrageous what he was doing. Did I say tennis or Fabio? Fabio, yeah. And so they battle it out and they go on for another. Sangren goes up two sets to Love because he immediately goes three Love up. It looked like Fognini had given up, just didn't want to be there. And then suddenly he clicks into gear and plays some of the most marvellous tennis you've ever seen to make it competitive. Goes to four sets. The match point was one of the best points of the tournament so far. Finished with a Sangren lunge volley. They were just going, straining their muscles to get side to side. They used every inch of the court. A brilliant rally. Sangren won it. And Fognini's out. So that's why Sangren now plays Roger Federer. But as you told me, I didn't see this, but you said that Sangren was really impeded. By the end, he'd hurt himself.
Yeah, I mean, when it went to four, I think had Fognini been more dialed in, or had it just not been Fognini, I was expecting Sangren to lose from that point because he looked so impeded. He had a major issue with his left hip that was preventing him from pushing off on the forehand. It was sort of echoes of, especially with it being on the Melbourne Arena, it was sort of a haunting echo of Andy Murray thrashing around the Melbourne Arena with one hip last year. I mean, incredible that he came through and won in four. And dealt with with what he described afterwards as the circus of playing Fabio Fognini. He did his after that extraordinary match point, his victory celebration was a sort of Shakespearean bow
right.
to the crowd. It was, yeah, it was elaborate.
Okay.
Which I'm all for, but he's got a very distinctive look going on at the moment, Tennis Angren, with his guns very much out. So it was quite a sort of, I don't know. It was a look.
He was one of only two players that entered out of 128 in the male draw wearing a sleeveless shirt, and both remain. So it's now 2 out of 8. Is it? We're into quarterfinals? We are.
Not quite.
I like his sort of shameless... I've been to the gym a lot in the past three months, and I really want people to know about it.
There really is that. And he's actually quite open about it as well. He actually described why he'd chosen that shirt and said, I've been working out, so you know, I kind of feel like I can pull it off.
Yeah, he definitely didn't look like that when he reached the quarterfinals here 2 years ago.
No, he was wearing very baggy clothes, yeah. actually, which I can relate to. He's through. I mean, well done to him. And I can't see him causing Federer problems. If he can't move 100% right and well, it took John Millman, the type of player he is and the sort of fitness he's got and the consistency he's got, in order to push Federer to that limit. And Federer wasn't even on top of his game. So I don't know. What do you think? I can't see Sangren beating Federer.
Well, the tone of Federer's conversation with McEnroe when Sangren was brought up indicated that Federer is not stressed about the prospect of Tennis Angren.
No. They've never played before, but no. Whereas the body language about Millman was, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Before and during and even after, he still wasn't over that match. He still wasn't over it today, I don't think.
No. But it did, I don't know about you, but it did make me think, just imagine what Djokovic would do to him if Millman put that sort of performance on him. Given how Djokovic is playing right now, I don't think Djokovic could look better if he tried right now.
Agreed. And I think the conditions are really not suited to Federer, particularly today. I popped out onto the Rod Laver Arena for Ash Barty, and it felt like Eastbourne. It was so chilly and windy. And that made the conditions really slow today, which Federer said he didn't favour. This new surface they've put down is slower. The balls are fluffing up after a few games. It's slow. The forecast is for it to get hotter and therefore faster. But how much do we trust the Melbourne forecast?
Certainly going to get hotter.
But is it going to be hot enough to properly speed up the conditions? I'm not sure.
I mean, the forecast is for it to get drastic
and doesn't
next week.
Need to sort of be sunny in order to make the court fast,
yeah.
i.e. like the actual court to be, you know, heated up
lively
by sun. I don't know.
And it'll be a night session match if Federer plays Djokovic in the semis. I just think it could have echoes of that semi-final they played in 2016, when Djokovic came out and took the first two sets 6-1, 6-2, and there was just nothing Federer could do to counter Djokovic's depth and relentlessness. I don't think that's a good matchup at all for Federer at the moment, particularly given he's looking pretty scrappy.
It always makes me laugh when tennis players and former players talk about court speed and conditions, because they so rarely agree.
Yeah.
There was that thing with... John Millman making the tennis balls wet with his own sweat by wrapping them in his shirt. And Brad Gilbert and Marty Fish and all these other players, they're all arguing about whether it'd make it fast or slow. In terms of what it would do to the balls, they're all disagreeing.
I do wonder whether Federer's best chance will be Milos Raonic. Although the head-to-head there would indicate certainly not.
You don't want to be relying on that result.
No. You'll be getting a nice preview of that in tomorrow's show, because I've been speaking to Goran Ivanišević after today's match. We've got 10 minutes of that. And we've got 10 minutes of Mats Wilander today.
It was a graveyard of Goran's exes.
Yes.
On Margaret Court Arena today.
Yes, because... Marin Cilic was beaten by Raonic.
Yeah, not fully fit, I don't think, Cilic.
No.
Understandably so, but
And there
still.
is there is something about the way Raonic is playing at this tournament. There's a calmness to him. And he's really peaking at the right time at the end of sets. And I think the fact that we weren't talking about Raonic, I don't think anyone really saw Raonic as a contender. He has not had much matches. He's the 32nd seed. But I don't think that bothered Raonic at all. He's a man of real self-belief in his own game. And if he thinks he's fit and he's healthy, he thinks he's a threat. And I feel like he still thinks he's a scalp. He still thinks he's the same danger to the top players as he was when he was at his peak a few years ago.
Even Djokovic with that head-to-head?
However,
do you believe you? Oh, right. I've preempted your big butt.
Yeah. So I went to both press conferences, and obviously Raonic and Djokovic were both asked about that match. And Djokovic was asked to compare Raonic's serve to Karlovic and Isner. And he basically said that he can read Raonic's serve in a way that he can't really read Isner and Karlovic. He has to rely on a little bit more guesswork and really exploiting their movement. Whereas with Raonic, it's more a case of, actually, I can read this thing and I can get my returns back. And Raonic echoed that. He said that he really finds Djokovic the hardest returner because he stands up the court, returns up the middle of the court, takes his angles away, and used this really interesting phrase that he doesn't give you time to organize yourself. And Raonic is absolutely a player that needs that time with his long, elaborate swings.
I think he's all about organisation in all aspects of life. Yeah.
You only have to look at his hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he feels just completely uncomfortable playing Djokovic for that reason. And, you know, we talk about slow conditions, that those will also favour Djokovic in a matchup against Raonic.
Mm, yeah. And actually, I believe that in his head he feels he's as big a deal and as much as of a force as he was in 2016 when he was meeting Andy Murray in the final of Wimbledon. He believes he's still the same player,
yeah,
if he's fully fit.
Yeah.
But back then he had an inferiority complex against Novak Djokovic, and right now I'm sure he has, because why wouldn't you when your record is 0-9? And most of the matches have not been close. Djokovic just takes away his biggest weapon very quickly in a match. Okay, it might go to a tiebreak in the first set, but also it underestimates. I think we are guilty as a profession, generally, of underestimating the Novak Djokovic serve because it's not spectacular.
It's becoming more so.
It's just become so much more effective, hasn't it, and efficient. How do you break the guy? It's not easy anymore.
And he backs it up so well, you might get it back. But if he's hitting his spots, you're only going to get it back maybe up the middle of the court. And then he's got the best ground strokes probably in the world to take over the point.
He beat Diego Schwartzman today and it wasn't close. It was not even for us. There was not a second in that match when I thought he was going to lose.
No. I thought Schwartzman would test him a bit more, actually. I was really struck by just how easily he brushed him
off. I thought he'd force a tiebreak or a 7-5 set, or, you know, there'd be a moment where he'd get on a roll and
he'd be up 5-2 in a set or something.
Yeah.
Because he's a flashing blade kind of player.
Exactly.
And the legs going a million miles an hour and
Djokovic
all the rest.
Djokovic was just too good. Too good.
Mm. So, that takes us to the other evening match we had today, which was Ash Barty beating Alison Risk. And I thought this was a little similar to Federer beating Milman the other night, kind of just being able to do something. I mean, I know Federer has beaten Milman before, but it just had that feeling of, crikey, he beat him even when it didn't look like he would. And yes, Barty was in charge and she won the first set, and then Risk won the second 6-1. But all the way through, it felt really as though Barty was vulnerable tonight, even though she was playing well, because Risk is her difficult player. They'd played twice before. Risk had won them both, including at Wimbledon, and ends up being a pretty big win, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. She seemed... there seemed to be trepidation in Barty tonight, and I think down to the opponent. And I have so much admiration for Alison Risk. I really do. I love that after she lost the first set, she just hunkered down. She didn't make a single unforced error in the second set. She just completely hunkered down, and it was really effective. she gets in Barty's head in a way that she's so unaggressive about it. That's what she's doing. She just never goes away, even for a flicker of a moment. And yet still looking at her game, I'm thinking, what is she actually doing that's being effective here? I was watching on a screen, whereas you were watching in your incredible position from the Five Live commentary box. And I think you've got a better perspective than I do of what actually tennis-wise Alison Risk was doing to hurt Barty. Because other than not making mistakes and sort of being in her head a bit, I couldn't quite figure it out.
It's fascinating. You know, the closest, it only just occurred to me, the closest game star that I can compare it to from yesteryear, actually, is probably someone like Jimmy Connors, in terms of this kind of paddling forehand where it's all straight armed and open faced and no topspin, and then this rifled backhand, and again sometimes almost hit under spin because it all feels flat to me. And watching court level the way we do, even more so, you're behind the player and you see this ball just shoot off into the distance with no dip on it at all, and the premium is on whether she's accurate. Because she's not hitting it that hard, but it just skates through. So she's going into the corners, and when it hits the ground, it just shoots off very low. And Barty's left with that little conundrum. How does she play against it? Does she slice? Does she drive? And she ends up getting kind of handcuffed, a little bit like, I suppose, like the way Djokovic handcuffs people. And then she'll follow it in and knock off volleys. That's the other thing. But I also think there probably is a mental element to it. Once you've lost a couple of times to the same player, especially at Wimbledon, and you know, the pressure on Barty here. You described it as, when you were watching it, as you're trying to work out whether it was flat as an atmosphere. And in the second set, you could see people are just absolutely terrified at the prospect of a losing.
It's fascinating how the Rod Laver crowd respond to that. They go quiet. They respond to tension by going quiet rather than rousing.
They need the player to get them going.
Exactly.
Yeah. And especially with Barty, I think, because Barty is not demonstrative with fist pumps and urging the crowd on in the way that John Millman was the other night against Federer. They just respond to her brilliant tennis. But if her tennis goes a bit quiet, they follow and go a bit quiet. Mm. And there was this tension in the stadium. But yeah, I think Risk as well is, she's clearly, for the reasons you've said, less bothered by Ash Barty's style than a lot of players. And therefore, Barty is the one slightly having to adapt. Whereas often, Barty comes with such a unique game that players have to adapt to her. And it just seems like the other way around in that matchup. And maybe that throws Barty off a little bit. It's certainly a matchup you want to see more of. And Risk is, you know, we'll come on to Sofia Kenin. I felt like both those players are kind of similar in that they're Americans and they've really climbed up the rankings. But there's not been a huge amount of hype or talk about them. They're not these really exciting prospects or players that get everyone talking, but they are both really, really good players.
Which is particularly bizarre in Kenin's case, because she's young.
Because she's young.
She's a breakthrough, up-and-comer, exciting young player that's had zero hype.
And it was
she's beaten Serena Williams at a Grand Slam.
It's extraordinary to compare that to Coco Gauff, who she played today.
It's particularly jarring when you consider that she is actually a child phenomenon. From when she was 6-7 years of age, there are videos out there shown of her 6 or 7 years of age hitting the ball with Maria Sharapova and being interviewed and asked, who's your favorite player? She says, Andy Roddick. They say, oh, what would you do if you played against, could you return his serve? And she goes, yeah. Well, how would you do that? Well, I'd just split step and I'd have a short take back and I'd return it. And she's like 6 or 7 years old. This is Sofia Kenin. And for some reason, I can't quite remember all the story of how she didn't then just come through like the prodigy that Coco Gauff is. Despite all this hype, and this stuff happened all the time, she was always playing exhibitions with big-named players when she was a little child. And here she is, age 21, and she's had a steady rise, really, hasn't she, if you look at the ranking. And then suddenly last year, it all clicked. But it clicked in that kind of relentless way she has. She never throws in a rubbish performance. She's always there. You might beat her, but you have to beat her.
Everything you were saying about why you admire Alison Risk is similar with Kennett, that attitude. She's all business.
Mm.
She stalks around the court like she owns it. I love it. I really find her composure just great to watch, and I think it threatens opponents because they know that there's no let up against her whatsoever. She's the ultimate street fighter.
That was so noticeable in that match against Serena at the French Open, wasn't it? That there was just, I mean, if anything, she was the one that was intimidating out there. Her body language was more intimidating, and Serena almost seemed sort of a bit taken aback that her usual currency just didn't even register with Sophia Kenin. She just didn't even seem to notice that it was Serena Williams up the other end of the court. And presumably Serena has been an enormous part of her whole life.
There's also a Russian background for Sophia Kenin. She says that her feistiness is a result of her Russian heritage. The person she idolized was Maria Sharapova, and she's played against her. And here she is in the quarterfinals. So she plays now Ons Jabeur?
Correct, yeah.
What a story she is.
Incredible story.
I mean, this is... for a start, if you haven't seen her play, go watch her. Because she has to be one of the most watchable tennis players on the circuit in terms of just being fun to watch. The sheer... ball playing ability she has is a treat. You know, she's got every shot in the book. She's got imagination, and she's got the ability to pull it off. Spins. It's like, you know, there's almost a Nick Kyrgios vibe to her skill set. Mm. And she's not physically imposing. She's not a tall woman. I just find it really uplifting that she's managed to get herself to the quarterfinals. And then there's a background to it as well, because I think she's the first Arab person to reach the quarterfinals, I think I read, since Hichem Arazi back in, goodness knows how
long. I think the first Arab woman ever.
Yeah, ever.
Oh, really?
And absolutely the first. I mean, she was the first Tunisian woman to reach Grand Slam fourth round. Yeah, she's an incredible story, and as I say, the fact that she doesn't shy away from any of those features of her success, I just find wonderful and sort of depressingly refreshing, I suppose, because so many do shy away from that stuff, as understandable as it is. She's more than happy to be a trailblazer and speak up about stuff that she finds important. She's an incredible story, and what an opportunity for Jabeur and Sophia Kenin. An opportunity.
It's fantastic, really, for them individually. And I just think, you know, it's just really nice to have two new players on that stage. And I really don't know who's going to win.
And also not to just completely come out of nowhere. I mean, Kenin's been building for the last... year in particular. Jabeur, we've always kind of known, had this potential
she's
in her, which she seems
say,
to have just unlocked.
Oh, that could be tricky.
Exactly.
When someone draws Jabeur, she's an all that could be tricky.
Well, the moment Joe Konta drew her, and I know Konta had got this knee injury, etc., but even if she hadn't, you could imagine that Jabeur
Definitely.
Would have given her nightmares, really.
And I think, I mean, we will completely never know, but I think Jabeur would have troubled Serena. Had Serena come through the Chung Wong match. I think that it was a tough matchup for Serena.
What did she beat Wong about? 7-6-1?
It was a tight first set, and then a fairly comfortable second set.
Yeah.
And Jabeur said that she wanted to play Serena.
Interesting.
Yeah, she wanted that opportunity, that experience, that as you're saying, that opportunity to put her game up against Serena's and see what would have happened. And I love that. She's open about that as well. She's really charming, Jabeur, in her press conferences. She's really open and
I read a quote that she'd been sitting side by side on the exercise bike with Sophia Kenin in the warm down after the match, and one of them said to the other, "Oh, how are you feeling? Tired? No. You? No.
See you on."
Well, once one said no, the other one's obviously going to say no.
I feel great.
should we wrap the Coco Gauff story?
Yeah. How would you like to wrap it?
Well, both of you commented. I saw a tweet from Matt, but you said something similar, I think, on our WhatsApp group. That, I mean, I'd noticed it earlier in the week. I think after her second round match that. Australia's been into Coco Gauff. They've liked it, and obviously particularly the matchup with Osaka, that was exciting. But it hasn't been mania in the way that it was at Wimbledon and the US Open, and aspects of that mania were intoxicating and wonderful, but elements of it, for me, I found just ever so slightly irksome as well. And it's been really enjoyable to watch Coco Gauff a bit outside of the mania, still with all the vibes. You know, it was brilliant on Melbourne Arena today. You know, disappointing that the deciding set was so one-sided. It was 6-love to Kenin, but it was, you know, there were parts of that match that were brilliant, and Coco Gauff was electrifying for all the reasons that we sort of come to expect her to be electrifying, and just to appreciate her tennis and to get to know it a bit was a real pleasure for me, and she is some tennis player. I think you said she's, not for the first time, finding yourself saying she's a better tennis player than I realised, because I don't know whether it's a British thing to sort of be down on hype, but you almost expect to be disappointed by her in the flesh, because there's so much hype. How can anyone possibly live up to that hype?
Plus, I think every time we are seeing her, from Slam to Slam, Wimbledon to US Open to Australian Open, she is adding.
Yeah,
she is. Yeah.
She is a better player each Slam.
And she's going to get so good. But Kenin, worthy winner today, because she could have ended up winning that in straight sets, actually, as well. Mm.
Yeah, she was ahead in the first set.
And an interesting one for her as well, as a 21-year-old American that's received no hype, to be looking down the other end of the court. I mean, she doesn't seem to have any kind of chip on her shoulder about that, which, you know, is reflective of the attitude we've discussed and how impressive she is.
Barty is going to play Petra Kvitova,
which
is fascinating for all sorts of reasons, because, I mean, that is a big match. And they played each other, I think, at exactly the same stage last year. Kvitova won on that occasion. I think there have been other matches where Barty's won. So
Barty's won all three since. It's that rivalry has really turned around, flipped on its head.
I didn't realise it was three.
Yeah, I think Kvitova had... because she beat Barty in Sydney the week before last year's Australian Open. Then she beat her at the Australian Open. And then since then, Barty's won all three. So Kvitova beat Maria Sakkari today, which was a good match, a slightly strange match, because Kvitova just wasn't finding her range in the first set. And when she's like that, she's pretty error-prone, and she can... it can run away from her a match, and Sakkari did well to hustle and use her athleticism. But then suddenly, Kvitova just started dominating Sakkari's serve. At one point, she won 6 out of Sakkari's 7 service games. It was a run.
She went in a set and a half without holding serves, Sakkari.
And it was really kind of intimidating to see the way Kvitova can just tee off. And if she's got her range, which she found... how do you beat her when she's hitting the ball?
Pretty
like
dramatic
that?
Because when I had one of my 4 daytime naps of a year at this point, when it was 1 set of love for Sakkari, and I went to sleep with the message from Catherine about how smug she was feeling. Because
no, I said I'm looking forward to feeling smug at some time in the future, sometime in the near future.
Yes.
And then I think I specifically said, this is not for the podcast. Because obviously, what's the opposite of smug? Humiliated.
I've forgotten that bit.
Pride comes before a fall.
Okay. And then I woke up and it all turned around. And there we are.
She's a funny one, Sakari. It's very...
She's on the edge of her nerves, isn't she, when she's playing?
Yeah, I mean, she did... It's tough to know how much it's Kvitova and how much it's her, but she let the occasion get to her. Mm. I think she really did. The sort of change in her demeanour and the obvious signs of stress, and she's got this game that isn't natural. I don't think she can. It's analog. It's not digital. I don't think she can. You know, Kvitova is just trusting her instincts, and she's teeing off. She knows what her game is, and you know, she's. At the end of the first set, she was obviously, I think she said in the on-court interview, I don't know how I turned it around, I just kept doing it and hoped they'd start going in. Mm. Whereas Sakari, you could see her mind whirring.
Yeah, what she's been told, what she's supposed to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And she's very ambitious, Sakari, which I like, but I think she needs to realise that it's a little bit of a process that she needs to go on. She keeps, like, her quotes today after getting to... the fourth round here. It was a good run for Sakari. She beat Madison Keys.
She played above her seed. Milestone.
And yet she seemed really disappointed by it.
Is it a Greek thing?
Perhaps. That's a good point. I'm quite into
Or maybe she's learned from Tsitsipas. I don't know.
I'm quite into the idea of them sort of alternating really excellent Australian Opens.
Well, we like them both, so
yeah.
That'll be all right. Okay, so Kvitova through to play Barty, fascinating. Let's have a little look ahead to tomorrow before we hear from Mats Wilander on the state of the men's game, which is an interview I did on BBC Radio a couple of days ago. And it, as usual, Mats is fascinating. It was an event that Eurosport put on because he's working for Eurosport, who are the rights holders in the UK. But first of all, let's just have a little look ahead to tomorrow to see what we've got. It's still fourth round, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's the other halves of the draw tomorrow.
Right, so
it's the,
okay. So we start with Elise Mertens against Simona Halep on the Rod Laver Arena. That could be close. The way Mertens is...
Could be long.
Yeah, I mean, Mertens is dusting players at the moment, but then Halep is looking really good too.
Mm. Well, I've got Halep in the final, so...
I think you should be feeling quite good about that.
I don't feel good about any of my predictions.
We've not had the best time, have we?
No. Steam train none of us saw coming. Yeah.
And yet, it feels kind of obvious.
Yeah, yeah.
She got to the final last year.
That's the point. Steam trains are pretty obvious.
Yeah, true.
Well, Mertens beat Halep in Doha last year. The French Open, Halep won comfortably in 2018, 2-1. The same in Madrid. So on clay, she's beaten her easily, but she's lost to her on hard court. So it could be close, that. Right, now after that, it's Gael Monfils against Dominic Thiem. Thiem, who has...
See my comments about Halep and put them to Thiem.
Thiem is... Thomas Muster's been talking...
Yes, he has not taken this well. His ditching.
He's given an amazing quote.
Yeah, can we hear what it is?
It's translated from German.
Mm. Yes, an interview with Boris Becker, of all people, has been interrogating him.
Got the exclusive.
He said, sometimes you see a house that looks nice on the outside, but you don't know what's inside.
He said, and this is quite a thing to say after being sacked after 2 weeks, he said, I had seen this being a relationship that would go on for years.
Oh, dear.
And it's lasted days.
Awkward. Okay, so Dominic Thiem, he should beat Monfils.
I mean, on a serious note, something has happened there.
Yeah.
And that is a concern now about Thiem, whether that's going to affect him on the court.
Could be quite tiring, couldn't it, to have a bit of fallout like that? I mean, you know, to make a big decision to kick out an Austrian legend. Mm.
He's
like
not
that.
Used to controversy he's a drama-free zone,
although,
Dominic Thiem.
Although I do remember at the French Open last year when he was kicked out of the main interview room, how we thought that his reaction to that was actually really positive. What the hell?
It's great.
A joke.
Oh, yeah, that was so great.
And
unexpected sass from Dominic Thiem.
Yeah, and then
maybe
he made his way all the way to the final.
That is not what we'd expect from looking at the house.
Exactly. You've cracked it. But he's dominated the head-to-head against Monfils. I was looking it up earlier. Five wins, zero losses, and I think he's won something like eight sets in a row. So
wow. Yeah, I can imagine that continuing. Garbiñe Muguruza against Kiki Bertens.
Another steam train.
That could be close.
Yes.
That could be good. I think Muguruza's going to win.
All?
Well, no, that match. She could win it all.
She could
definitely win it all. And then Rafael Nadal against Nick Kyrgios.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Right.
If they put something on after Nadal and Kyrgios.
Doubles.
Yeah. Oof. 7 o'clock local time. So it, 8 in the morning UK.
Is it proper doubles or is it legends doubles?
It's proper doubles. It's Duckworth and Pullmans against Bublik and Kukushkin.
I watched them on the telly earlier, Duckworth and Pullmans. Pullmans has got an interesting kit.
Okay. What is it?
Looks like something bad's happened in the wash.
Right.
You go. That's the reason you all need to stick around after 5 hours of Kyrgios and Nadal to watch the doubles.
Bad kit alert, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Margaret Court Arena, third match on at not before 3 p.m. local time. Daniil Medvedev against Stan Wawrinka. I wonder if it'll be weird this time. And then Angelique Kerber against Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova.
Another steam train.
And Anett Kontaveit against Iga
Swiatek.
And I should just address my comments about Iga Swiatek yesterday, which when she was describing her name or telling us how we should say her name, and there's the Polish version, Swiatek, and there's the English version Swiatek on that little video that I described, I said she didn't sound as though she knew which one she wanted. Well, I had another listen to it today. I got a bit of stick on Twitter about it. Turns out she did actually say, I'm quite happy with the Polish version. So Swiatek it is. That's absolutely fine. We would always go with whatever a player wants. That's always going to be the case. There we are. What else have I got to say? We've got Andre Rublev against Alexander Zverev tomorrow on the Melbourne Arena. There's a lot of good matches tomorrow, aren't there?
Tomorrow's really strong.
I think tomorrow is the last day of Melbourne Arena fun. So
yes.
Let's all enjoy it while we can.
And then it just becomes an empty box.
Yeah,
for
it's horrible what happens to the Melbourne Arena.
Mm. Yeah. Who's going to win that? Who are you going for? Or are you going to wait for the newsletter and have... your newsletter?
I said Rublev yesterday, didn't I? You're a believer.
I'm going Zverev.
I can see it. But... Well, I had Rublev in my quarterfinals before the tournament, so I can't hedge now, can I? David's the hedger in the group.
Hedging on a daily basis.
He claims it's inadvertent, but...
Most of the time it has been, but now I'm starting to think it might be a good idea. If I want to close that gap, that mighty gap.
So you're going Rublev, Matt?
I'm going Rublev, yeah.
Okay. Right then.
I think it'd be good, though.
I do, yeah.
Should we ever listen to Mats Wilander, who is a seven-time champion? He's won the Australian Open, a former world number one. Got a chance to speak to him a couple of days ago. First thing I asked him is how far away he felt we were from a new male Grand Slam champion.
I think we are about 3 years away from a complete changing of the guards at the end of Grand Slam tournaments. I mean, I think the changing of the guards is happening slowly. I think we're seeing some of the young guys come out and be more physical, faster, hit the ball harder. They're better athletes than some of the 35-year-olds that are still on tour, and they're hanging on by being tactically more skilled, but clearly technically not as good. And I think the best guys are, I think without the chase on, I have a feeling we wouldn't have had this Roger, Rafa, Novak. I think there's something outside of just improving that's driving them, which is why they're all trying to improve and change serves like Nadal and Novak. But the changing of the guards at the top, I see the difference between them and the Tsitsipas and Medvedevs and the Tiafos and on and on and on and on, is the gap is huge to me. Absolutely huge. As big as it's ever been.
That includes Tsitsipas, Medvedev,
yes.
Team.
It includes all of them in terms of winning. It doesn't include all of them in terms of winning against one of them. But you have to say that, okay, to be able to win a Grand Slam today, you have to be ready to be able to beat all three in three matches in a row. It might be that you only have to play one, but that's not the question to me. The question is any of the young guys good enough to take out Novak in the quarters, Roger in the semis, and Rafa in the finals? No, clearly not. They can win a major, you know, by beating one of them and then Roger, I don't know, whatever, and Rafa. But you got to beat the three of them in a row, I think. And I can't see that gap between... Again, I can see Tsitsipas beating them. I agree 100% that he can beat any of them at any time. But for him to beat Novak the one day and Roger 2 days later, and no, that's not going to... It can happen that they win, but that doesn't mean a changing of the guards. You know, changing of the guards is the guy that can beat all three matches in a row, to me.
So based on, I mean, obviously, still early stages of this particular tournament, but what are you expecting from, I mean, I assume, therefore, you think, on balance, one of those big three is going to win this in the end?
Well, yes, when I've seen the first, I mean, literally, when you watch the first few rounds, I think you realize, again, same thing. What's the difference between the first two rounds of Roger and Novak, and you compare that to the first two rounds of, let's say, Medvedev? I mean, it's light years, the difference. And that's when they're not even trying to do. They're just showing the guy. They're literally, Novak and Roger are telling the guy, listen, this is what's going to happen if you try really hard, and I'm trying really hard, okay? And I don't want to do that for three sets. Oh, you're now hanging on. Oh, jeez. Well, I got a bit unlucky. I dropped my serve. Now I'm going to break you. And I told you that's what's going to happen, because the two sets love, they both say, see ya. That difference is so massive compared to how Tsitsipas runs away with matches in the end, or how Medvedev. So to me, the skill level of those three is so much higher than everybody else, technically, tactically, physically. Now you add the emotional and the physical confidence they have from winning all these majors, and the ability to still look at the individual player on that day and say, really? Do you really think you have a chance to beat me today? Yeah, you might, but I'm going to make sure that you are feeling so awful at the end of this match that you're not going to be able to beat my buddy Roger in 2 days. No, it's... As long as those guys from underneath are not physically better than the three top players, I don't see it. That has to be the first thing that happens. And I think you see Shapovalov better than Feliciano Lopez. Do you know what I mean? Those guys are starting to fade out. Fernando Verdasco, not as good as Shapovalov, lefty, lefty, lefty. But with Roger, he's still better physically. So is Roger. And, I mean, so is Novak and Rafa. Mentally, obviously, the mountain is much, 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 much too tall for them to climb.
The ATP Cup gave a different kind of run into this event. Yeah. And I just had a... I was curious as to whether the way they peak might be different because of that. There was a lot of emotion involved for Djokovic. He played a lot of matches.
Yeah.
And Rafael Nadal has looked quite tired, a little fatigued. Do you think that could be a factor?
I think, yes. I think for Rafa it is a huge factor because of Davis Cup and ATP Cup. And I don't know... I would agree 100% that it's not perfect preparation to be able to play, to be put in the position where you're not only playing for yourself, where you have outside forces driving you on, and then suddenly you end up in a match at the Open, and it's five sets, and it's windy, and it's raining, and you're close to the roof, and you're sitting there, and you're playing some guy who you don't believe in, you don't want to be there, and you have no one cheering you on except your coach who's been with you for 15 years, on and on and on. Yeah, I don't think it's perfect preparation. I love the format, and I love the idea, and I love that. I think that it's going to prolong their career because there's another reason for them to play tennis, because I don't think the emotional involvement from Rafa and Novak is so great that I think they'll be looking forward to playing the ATP Cup for many, many years and the Davis Cup. So if you take that away, there'll be a reason taken away why they shouldn't keep playing. The slams, obviously, you keep. So it adds to the regular day. But at the same time, as a preparation, I agree with you. I don't think it's perfect preparation. And therefore, I think Roger is most probably the freshest of the three.
Yeah. Just a final thought. I mean, the numbers, we talk about them probably most Grand Slams between those three and the way they drive them on. I mean, it is incredible, isn't it, to think 20, 19, 16 for Federer, Nadal and Djokovic, respectively. Any thoughts as to where they're going to end up?
Not really, because I think that most the coolest thing about their rivalry, the three of them, is that it seems that it goes, oh, it's Rafa's time, oh, it's Novak's time. Suddenly it's Roger's time again, and he wins three majors in 2 years. And you're like, what the hell? How is this? So it's unpredictable. It's always been pretty unpredictable. That when one guy gets on top of the other two, then he stays ahead for a year or two. That's why it's hard to say, because if Novak gets on a run, then suddenly, well, I don't know, who's going to stop him winning six out of the next eight majors if he gets on another run? Not one of them isn't, because he's done it in the past. Is he going to get on? If he doesn't get on the run, well, then he's not winning more than one a year, because if psychologically Nadal, if he's not afraid of Novak, he wins two or three every year. So it's, what day is Novak going to wake up and say, you know what, I'm done. I'm going to run for the president of Serbia instead of playing tennis. I don't know when that happens, but physically, clearly, you would say that Novak, even though he's four behind, physically, I say that he's most probably in the best position to have the most majors at the end of everything, if it was all a physical thing.
So there's Mats Wilander. I just find myself almost not breathing when he talks, because I'm just so transfixed with the stuff he's saying, because I don't know where it's going to go next, and it's just so interesting from so many different perspectives. One, because he's in love with tennis, he's in love with watching it, he loves all of these guys, he's got a view of it all, and he'll watch tennis until the cows come out, won't he? And yet he's also done everything.
Yeah, it's infectious. Watching Mats Wilander watch tennis is better than watching tennis.
I don't say
that lightly.
Bit of experience of that.
Yeah, it really is. He lives and he can be watching. What was the example we used of a niche tennis match when we had Charlie on the podcast?
Goffin Baptiste Ragout.
Yeah, he would be watching Goffin Baptiste Ragout and living and breathing every moment of it.
Yes,
it's infectious.
What do you make of what he's got to say?
Well, interesting that he's, the 3 years before there's a proper changing of the guard. I mean, Amazon had an interview with Andy Murray around the time of the US Open last year, and he said he thought it would be 2021. But, you know, define changing of the guard, I suppose, is the thing.
And I think Mats has come up with an interesting definition of it there, as in one-off next gen or someone else winning a slam does not signal changing of the guard. It needs to be more sustainable, and it needs to be someone going through two or more of the big three to prove that they can beat them.
The only... I'm on a hiding to nothing by querying the words of Mats Wilander, but his questioning of those young guys physically, I do find surprising. You know, team Medvedev, Tsitsipas. I mean, I know Medvedev sometimes looks like he's held together by sticky tape, but doesn't seem to affect his tennis and his ability to win and go the distance.
And his physicality, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, for me, I don't have the physical question marks about them. I certainly think there are mental, varying degrees of mental question marks, and maybe that mental stress affects them physically in tight moments. I don't know, but I think they're fit and strong enough to.
Yeah. I certainly think
to break through.
Team Tsitsipas definitely are. I think look, Medvedev has got to a final and nearly beaten Nadal.
In five sets.
Which I still don't know how he did, given the state he was in earlier in that tournament. But, you know, he did it. I do feel that he will sometimes hit the wall, like he did at the O2. It doesn't give me as much... You never see Nadal, Djokovic or Federer hit the wall, do you? You just don't see that.
But that also comes from what I was saying the other day about their smarter scheduling. Yeah. They're not going to put themselves in a position where they're going to hit the wall at a Grand Slam, because they are intelligent enough to know that these are the events where they need to peak. And maybe, they've been doing it for so long.
Maybe that's where Muster and team had a disagreement about the schedule.
Maybe. I mean, that's certainly
Timbuktu in August.
I tell you, the amount... Muster used to play.
Well,
he used to play all the summertime clay court events.
They shared Günter Bresnik, didn't they?
Yeah.
They had Günter Bresnik in common as their coach, and we all thought when teams split from Günter Bresnik that the scheduling would change significantly, and maybe it has a bit.
I think it has a bit sort of earlier in the year, but I am still... I asked Dominic about his schedule, and he didn't really like it, did he?
No, not really.
There we are. I probably wouldn't like it either if I was in his shoes. Okay, well, I'm looking forward to tomorrow. It's going to be great, isn't it? Hope you are too. Make sure you watch as much as you can. We'll be bringing live commentary on BBC Radio if you're in the UK as well, particularly in that evening session with the Nick Kyrgios against Roger Federer match. And you can guarantee we will be back with a tennis podcast after play tomorrow, in which we'll review all of it. I can't wait. And we've got shout-outs, Matt.
Yes, we have. I was just going to say, on tomorrow, when there's one massive headline match like that, Kyrgios against Nadal, I always slightly worry that all day you're kind of waiting for that match. But I think the schedule tomorrow is strong enough that you can take in everything else before then.
Yeah, it's going to be a great day.
Oh, yeah, so good. So shout-outs to Bob Stocking.
Oh,
good on you, Bob.
To
relation of Pippi Long.
Maybe.
Look at Matt's confused face. Oh, God.
Go on, Bob. Who else we got?
Claire Hayden.
Yeah.
And Carrie Hopkins.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Carrie. Legends.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Backed us in our crowdfunding Kickstarter to enable us all to be doing exactly what we're doing right now. We can't wait for tomorrow. Hope you will look forward to it as well. Make sure you tell people you know, if you see them, if you play tennis at the club, and spread the word about the tennis podcast, get them listening, and also sign up to our Reddit community, our tennis podcast community, which is now over 500 strong, which means my Ask Me Anything is on its way, and I have now signed up to Reddit myself.
That is the first step, I think, to doing an Ask Me Anything.
My username is David Two Beers Law.
Strong.
So I think that says everything you need to know, and I'm on my second. And yes, newsletters coming your way. Matt's got the best stat you've ever seen tonight. And so get on the newsletter distribution list. Scan down on your show notes. Click, stick your email in. It's coming your way. And that's about it. We'll be back again with another tennis podcast tomorrow. Thanks for your company. We'll see you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.